Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Anabaptist Perspectives Partner Podcast. Very exciting interview today. A little bit of a different one because we've got AJ on. AJ, I've known you for a number of years. I think we bumped into each other at a missions conference or something back in the day and kind of stayed in touch. But you're doing something that is really interesting. We've been in touch about this for a while now, and I thought it fits really well with what we're doing here at Anabaptist Perspectives to do an interview about this. So a little bit of context before we jump in there. You know, Anabaptist Perspectives is making online media, which means anybody with an internet connection can hear it. So we regularly hear from listeners across Europe saying, wow, this is really interesting. I haven't heard teaching like this before. You know, I'm part of, say, you know, a Catholic or an Anglican church, and it's not really fitting for me. I want a more a tighter community, a deeper understanding of what it means to follow Jesus in day-to-day life. Are there any Anabaptist churches near me? And we get this pretty often, and it's kind of frustrating because there often isn't anywhere for us to refer these people to. So AJ, you have a bit of a vision for this kind of thing. So why don't you first introduce yourself a little, and also where are you right now and why are you there?
Yeah. So as he said, my name's AJ and I'm married. I have two young children and our home is in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. We're currently in southern Spain and it's part of a 3-month trip to explore, kind of do exploratory research throughout Europe to see opportunities among kind of 3 different groups of people: the flow of refugees moving into Europe and resettling there, as well as the European people who are, you could say, maybe post-Christian or secular, more so than many of us may realize. And the third group, being actually what you mentioned, is looking for ways to connect with those believers that are here that are expressing interest in Anabaptism. And so in that sense, kind of bringing Anabaptism back to Europe, there's ways that it still does exist here. There are some groups here, but making an effort to connect with those people, like you said, that are interested.
Mm-hmm. So ultimately, like, what's the goal with this? Is this a church planting endeavor? Is this a networking thing you're trying to do? Yeah. Actually, let me just phrase it this way. What's your dream for this?
I think maybe the long-term dream, and this could be 10 or 20 years from now, is to see a network of Anabaptist people throughout Europe, something like there hasn't been for many, many years. And something more similar to maybe what we have in the States. Seems like there's potential for that. So that's like the big long-term idea, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So really this is a church planting endeavor, right? That you're hoping to do. Is that a fair way of saying it? Or missions, maybe something like that?
Yeah. I think what I just described is a big long-term dream. But more specifically right now, what we've kind of defined, what's guiding us for now, and we are doing this exploratory research as Destinations International workers. And so we're under DNI in this, and they're supporting us, and also quite excited about this, the opportunities in Europe. So we've just defined the vision to see a network of Anabaptist churches, ministries, and communities established across Europe. And so a big piece of that is for us to connect with the Anabaptists that are here, as there are some organizations working in different areas of Europe. So visiting them and trying to connect with them and learn from them and see where there's more opportunities that there currently aren't ministries or churches being planted, and trying to bring awareness to those opportunities.
Mm-hmm. So really this is... this is embracing the historic roots, I would say, of Anabaptism. I don't know if that's how y'all have been thinking of this project, but that was when you initially told me some of your vision. I don't know, a year ago or so. That was something I immediately thought of, because the Anabaptist heritage that we would have come from Europe over to America. And now you think of at least our slice of conservative Anabaptism, we think of it as a very North American phenomenon, you know, and that wasn't really the case, you know, 400 years ago or whatever. Is that playing into this picture at all? I don't know if you want to speak into that. Some of the historical roots of this, it's almost like bringing Anabaptism back to Europe. Is that maybe a way of saying this as well? Or maybe that's a bit grandiose. I don't know.
I mean, it might be a bit grandiose, but I think it's definitely a really interesting aspect to this. And I think that it has potential to play a role as far as like the connection to the Anabaptist roots and history. It's interesting for me because both my parents are not from that heritage. They joined the Mennonites around the time I was born. And so my ancestry is from Italy, so just south of Switzerland and Germany. And so that has caused me to have particular interest in Italy. But as I've been talking to people about this, I've heard from a lot of people that are like, oh, this is so interesting, this idea of Anabaptist people going back to where they came from, realizing that we fled for persecution's sake. And in some ways, you could say there's a void that's been left there. And it's not that there's no Christians in Germany or Switzerland anymore, but the percentages are very low if you look at that compared to like the US, for example. So yeah, I've talked to people, Mennonites from the States, that have visited places like Germany or Switzerland and been like, oh wow, I can see a lot of our culture that remains today. Like, I feel at home here in a way. And so I think that presents a really unique opportunity if somebody's going to move there to help with a ministry or a church plant, that the feeling is closer to home than if they were to move to many other places in the world.
Yeah, that's interesting because a bit of a tangent, but I was on a trip through Austria a few years ago, and we went to a grocery store to buy groceries, and my wife was like, oh, look at this kind of bread. I really wish I could remember. I don't know any German. I can't remember how to pronounce it. But she's like, this is what grandma used to make. Like, this is exactly like it smells, tastes, looks exactly like. And she was just, my wife was just so surprised by it. She had no idea. Oh yeah, this actually comes from this part of Austria or Southern Germany, something like that area. And, you know, the family history has preserved that for hundreds of years. And there was little things like that all throughout the trip that it did kind of feel like home in a way. There's a cultural element to at least our slice of the Anabaptist world that still very much has roots there. And I find that really fascinating. I'm not sure if you use this exact terminology, but we look at some of these countries as kind of post-Christian, or not just look at them, they are post-Christian. So is this part of a vision of really reviving real Christianity inside Europe again? Again, sounds maybe a bit grandiose, but is that playing into this at all?
Yeah, I would say definitely, kind of as I talked about, the three things that we're focusing on and the secular European peoples being one of those three focuses. So to do that, I guess it's, as we travel through, we've been spending about a month or so in each country that we're visiting, and we can only learn so much or observe so much with our own eyes being there for a very short time. And so as much as possible, we've tried to connect to believers that are there working, whether Anabaptist or evangelical, because as we sit and talk with them, and they've been there, you know, maybe 10 years or something, they can give us a real sense for what is Christianity like there. And it's been really interesting hearing from them how one missionary pastor described it as being that there's a veneer of spirituality existing. This was in Italy, but there's really a lot of darkness there. Yeah, people have really fallen away from the truth. And so on the surface, they say, you know, you might think it doesn't look that much different than the US or feel that much different. But as you get to know them and know what people believe or think or the way they act, there's much more darkness there than meets the eye.
So in your, well, maybe let's back up a little bit of context here. You've been for the last number of months doing some exploring throughout Europe. You did different places to see. It's what Greece, Italy. I think you said you're in Spain right now. I think you're going to Ireland later. I think I'm getting these right.
Mm-hmm.
So on that trip, first off, whatever you want to share about that trip, because I found that fascinating. But also, overall, what are you sensing? What are you seeing? Like, I am unaware of hardly any Anabaptist options in Europe, especially like ministries. I think I've heard, you know, there's maybe some of the more the much more liberal branches of Mennonites still might be in some of these places like Germany, but that's about it. Like, you just, it, I don't know. I think in some of our conversations, I think a term that's come up is like, it's a black hole. It's like, is it, there's almost nothing from our branch of Christianity, the Anabaptist movement. It feels like there's so little over there, but yet we get regularly so many comments and questions from people within Europe asking us about this here at Anabaptist Perspective. So it feels like there's a real disconnect here. I'm not even sure how I'm framing this question. I'm just kind of rambling a little bit, but I think you sense what I'm getting at. Can you speak into that at all?
I think my impression has just kind of been formulated from people I've talked to. And it seems like we view it as being more or less a Christian continent is a big piece of it. And are unaware of how much Christianity has declined. And when we hear the numbers, say using like the joshuaproject.com to hear, what percent evangelical Christian is a given European country compared to the US, that numbers are much lower than what we would expect or than we maybe anticipated. So like Greece, for example, I think is about 0.5%.
A half a percent. That's yes. Lower than I anticipated. Wow. Okay.
I'm not good at remembering numbers exactly, but Italy's also less than 2%, as well as Spain. For context, the U.S., and this is all according to the Joshua Project, speaking of evangelical Christian, the U.S. I think is 26-27%, somewhere around there. So that kind of puts it in perspective a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. That's like many times less, how you would quantify that. But now, is that because you have a lot more people going to more high church traditions, Catholic, Anglican, Orthodox, or is that also in decline?
Yeah, that's a great question. That is somewhat in decline, I think. I mean, yes, a lot of people, like the Christian adherent of Italy is like 80% or more, and that would include Catholic. But I was told in Italy that the numbers of people that are actually practicing Catholics are very low. So where they may be a member in some way and participate, they're not regularly participating as a Catholic in the local church.
That sounds really familiar though, right? Like you see that in a lot of places where it's kind of like an ethnic Christian. So like maybe they're still on a census, you know, data as Christian, but they're not the real deal or something. Mm-hmm. Like interesting. Cause yeah. When we were in Austria, we bumped into this wonderful Christian couple and they were saying some of these very things, like just how little actual evangelical Christianity, or I'm saying evangelical in the actual meaning of the word, not like our, how we think of Americanism, evangelical fundamentalist style, but like, you know, born again, you know, they believe the Bible, they live it, that kind of evangelical. And they had absolutely heard of the Anabaptists and just had a lot of respect, you know, for us. We had a long conversation. This is people we bumped into. It was really interesting while we were out hiking one day. And they were just like, this is so great because you all actually live it. And it's so hard to find Christians here in Germany that actually live this stuff. And they said, you know, you look at the census data and it's like, you know, 20% or something. I forget what number they said, but a really high number, you know, quote unquote, are Christian. They see you dig into those numbers and almost all of them would be, oh, well, they were baptized as an infant. So they're like on the registry as Christian or something. But I mean, they go to church once a year, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's kind of wild. Yeah.
The other answer to your question is some of our researchers were telling us that they're more likely to explore, rather than like take more interest in even Catholicism or explore Christianity, they're more likely to explore atheism or So a lot of them have turned to atheism and are just non-believers or maybe agnostic. I'm not sure how well that gets reported, you know, in statistics.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just a lot of spiritual darkness, more than meets the eye. So this discussion of like how much, how low the percentages are of true believing, practicing Christians in areas of Europe, that's actually been one of the things that was, I would say, kind of the original motivating factor for diving into this several months ago. And as we talked with Dee and I about some of the things we'd seen last winter, we spent 3 months in Germany volunteering with an Anabaptist organization there. And the thing that really grabbed us was thinking about how there's many people coming from completely unreached places of the world into Europe. And we're very well aware of that. That's something that's kind of been a hot topic among the Anabaptists. Probably, it's been happening for a long time, but it's probably been a hot topic ever since like 2015, maybe, when Greece was just exploding with refugees coming in. And that, I think, maybe really first brought attention to it. But these people are moving through and they're coming and resettling in all areas of Europe, Germany resettling more than most other countries. But what really grabbed me is realizing that, oh, this is exciting that these people are coming to a place where they can now be reached with the gospel. But who are the Christians here that are going to do that? And realizing that when 1 or 2% of the population are practicing Christians and the type of person that will hopefully share their faith, those people's chances haven't increased that much of hearing the gospel. So that was a big motivating factor to me to realize that, like, okay, this is a reason why we need people in Europe. Because I kind of asked myself that question when I was there. I was like, okay, well, it's a really unique context to do ministry in, I think, because you're coming in as not the second culture, but a third culture or a seventh culture, because the town you move into could have, it's obviously, it's a German town, maybe if you move to Germany, but there could be 10 different nationalities represented there, or even many more than that. And so what do you do about learning language? Do you learn just the local language? You make an effort to learn the language of some of the people coming in? If so, which one? Anyway, so I started to feel like, you know what? We have people in my hometown. We live in Lancaster City that speak my language, and it's my home culture. I understand the local ecosystem and how to help them get jobs and navigate the medical system and whatever, you know. Why don't I just let the Christians in Germany do that, you know? So anyway, when some missionaries that were working in Italy and Germany started sharing with me about what some of those percentages are like, it didn't hit me right away, but later it kind of struck me, and I was like, okay, that's the answer to the question of why should we have people in Europe? So I think that's what kind of initially put us onto this, but it really presents that for me is what led us to the second need of, hey, there not only are these people coming from unreached places that we want to be able to share the gospel with, but the people of Europe, many of them are now just secular, non-believing or non-practicing Christians. And so it's an opportunity to share the gospel with both and show them what it looks like to follow Christ. And then I think it was actually talking with you that led us to the third focus, realizing that you have some listeners from Europe that are interested in Anabaptism or maybe even practicing as Anabaptists, and would love to get closer connected with a local Anabaptist church, but there are none. And so realizing like, hey, that's a fantastic opportunity, and that should really be a part of this larger effort to connect with those people and expound on that, I guess. So yeah, that's a long answer to...
Yeah, that is really good, because I remember when the whole refugee thing in Greece primarily, but other places too, is like, oh yay, what a wonderful opportunity, you know, all these people coming into a place where we can reach them. And I remember, that's great, you know, without really thinking through, like, wait a second, like, how's that actually going to work? Like, if they're coming into, like you said, Greece, which is, I think you said less than 1% or whatever it is, you know, very low percentage. Actually, we haven't really done anything. We haven't moved the needle at all by these refugees coming into this country versus the country they came from. I mean, with numbers that low, let's say they're coming from Syria or Iraq, there's probably about that same amount of percentage or even more evangelical Christians in those countries. You know, they may be persecuted, but they would be there. You know, right. So is this actually making a difference? The only difference is, going back to there's almost a bit of ethnocentricity going on here where, oh, they're coming into a culture more like ours, like a more Western culture. And so therefore, yay, that's good. And I absolutely heard that coming out from people when it's like, hold on, let's back up. So it's coming to a culture that's more Western, more like us, I guess, but it's not necessarily more Christian. So how is this a net positive? And I will say, I didn't really think of that at all until you and I started having some conversations about this. And it feels like my brain is still trying to undo that, because that's so in our heads, you know, that, well, of course it's better there than it is in Syria, you know? Well, but from a Christian perspective, I don't actually know about that. Like, I guess there's not the persecution, but I struggle with that. And then you mentioned the other side, you know, or another angle too, where you have a lot of people in Europe that are pretty disillusioned with the state of the church there, mm-hmm. and are looking for churches. So I quick pulled up the analytics on our YouTube channel, which, since this is a partners podcast, I think I can get a little into this. We probably wouldn't do this normally publicly, but of course, the United States and Canada are the top two. And this is just YouTube. It doesn't count, you know, podcast platforms and things like that. But, you know, the third most watched is in the UK. You know, hundreds of people this year. Australia is fourth. Going down the list a little further, but we've got Germany, Serbia, you know, Sweden, Romania, Iceland, which is really unusual, actually. We don't normally get views from Iceland, Portugal. And what I'm finding in these... If you they'll show analytics of how long people watched for, and the ones watching from Europe typically watch longer. So maybe it won't have as many views from Europe as we would in, say, Canada, but they're watching for longer. And so that tells me, oh, these people are really interested. And I've mentioned this in passing different times, but yeah, we'll regularly hear from them saying, where's a church like this? Like, I am looking, mm-hmm. I'm looking for a place that does what Jesus says, and all I have right now is, you know, an Eastern Orthodox church, whatever, and it's all just ritual, and I don't really want that. And not to harsh on the Eastern Orthodox, but these people are saying there's something missing here, and I've never really known what to do with that. It's actually really hard when we get comments like that. It's like, what do you tell those people? Sorry, I mean, there's nothing. You know, we've been asked so many times, is there Anabaptists in London? You know, we've had quite a number of people from London contact us. It's like, sorry, that there really isn't, you know, that not that we know of.
So to add to what you're saying there, when you first told me them its numbers several months ago, I was really intrigued as well. And I was trying to figure out, why would there be somebody from the UK and not other countries in Europe? And I'm not sure why it took so long to figure out that language is probably the simple answer to that. So if you had content in German or Swedish or Dutch or French, you know, that might look a lot different.
It really would, yeah.
Interestingly enough, we actually plan to connect this Sunday with basically someone that's a very similar story to what you just described. I don't know if they've seen the Anabaptist Perspective content at all yet, but they're originally from a Northern European country and started to read the Bible and in a different way, I guess, than they had growing up, and were seeing things and kind of starting to practice as Anabaptists, and then found some content from, I think maybe Scroll Publishing, and were like, oh, there's people that live like this, and there's a whole bunch of Anabaptists in the States. And so anyway, they have someone connected me to them, and we hope to meet them, and they're really excited.
Wow.
Meeting them here in Spain, actually. So yeah, I think it's so unique that we're talking about this, and we actually have this opportunity to connect with some people. So,
well, message me after you meet them and ask them like where they found this material. You know, is it just, are they Googling? What do they do? Like, they Google this stuff? It pops up on YouTube suggested?
I think Googling it. I'll certainly talk to you. But the head covering is a big element. And so I think when you start researching that, there's not too many groups out there beyond the Anabaptists, at least that I'm aware of, that practice that in the way that we do. And so the content, some of the best content that's out there on that is like David Verso talks about it a lot. And I think they actually mentioned seeing some of his content. So I think that was, I'm assuming it was through a Google search in that way.
Now, are they living in Spain or are they traveling down to see you?
They are actually, they're basically in search of an Anabaptist community from what I'm told. I've only communicated over WhatsApp with them. I haven't gotten to connect with them in person yet, so I haven't heard their full story, but they're actually, they're in Spain at the time, and it was someone from Ireland that connected me from some of the Anabaptists that are living there. And they're actually leaving this weekend to take a long road trip up towards Ireland. And I don't know, you know, what the plans are, just to visit or possibly stay. And so when they heard that there's some Anabaptists here in Spain, they sounded quite thrilled to get to connect.
Wow, that's really something. I'd be really curious if they've found our content or who they've been watching, you know, Sound Faith, you know, Strength to Strength. There are definitely others in the space, which I'm thrilled about. There needs to be more. You know, we've had some really deep engagement, you know, in like the Netherlands is another one. You know, you get these emails and different things, and yeah, another one was Albania. You know, I actually went over and met them. That was really interesting. And yeah, it's tough because you want to help these people and support them, but if there's no church community or that they are a part of, it is a challenge. I guess we've batted this one around quite a bit, trying to figure out like what do we tell these people and how do we support them. And so that, again, when I heard some of your vision, you know, I don't know, a year ago or so, I started getting really excited about that from that angle, because I'm, you know, I can see these analytics. I can see all these people that are watching, and they're not watching for 2 minutes. They're watching the whole episode, you know, and it's like, okay, you know, these people they want to know, they want to learn, and how can we better support that? And I think, which really let's to pivot slightly, but the next question I would really have, you know, for those that are listening to this podcasts, like what are things people can do about this? Like, how can they get involved? What do you need? Resources? Do you need more people to join a team? Like, yeah, what's the next move here? What is a takeaway people can have from this episode?
Mm-hmm. So maybe I'll back up just a little bit and answer one of your earlier questions of kind of a better, bigger picture of what we're doing. So, we're taking this year under Destinations International to explore the field of Europe, basically. And so we're just doing 2 3-month trips is the plan. So we're coming to the end of our first 3-month trip. And the idea was to spend about a month in Greece, Italy, and Spain. And about halfway through our time, I started getting closer connection to the people in Ireland. I knew they were there. And so I connected to them and I was like, hey, you know what? I was looking at tickets and it made a lot of sense to actually stop there for about a week before we head home. So we'll be connecting there as well. But I've really appreciated DNI's vision to seeing this as something that's much broader and grander than what DNI could do alone. And so looking at how can they, or I should say we as a DNI representative, how can we collaborate with other Anabaptist organizations that are either already working in Europe or have interest to? And so the month before we left, I spent a bit of time as much as possible connecting in person with people from different organizations, Anabaptist organizations that fit in one of those two categories. And so we talked with them before we left and are trying to keep them in the loop as we go, and hope to connect with some of those people again when we get back home for the winter, to just realizing that like we can go further together than we can alone. So to answer your last question of how can people get involved, I think one way is we have two kind of ways that people can follow along. We have a WhatsApp group called Destination Europe, and you can help me get a link out to any of your followers here, any of the listeners that would like to join that. And so we've just been posting updates on there as a family as we travel along, and short video clips of things we're seeing. Obviously, once you join, you don't get to see previous posts. And so we had an idea to start a small website where it's an easy place to point someone towards if they want to hear more about the vision and kind of read our mission and vision statement, and how this came about. And then as part of that website, we're writing blogs. Some of them are just kind of chronicling our journey as a family as we travel through. And so some of it's more just an interesting read to see what it's been like and the way God has opened connections for our family. And then the other articles that we're writing are more like a review of what we're seeing. And so that's a great way for people to follow along. Each time we have a new article on the website, I post a link on the WhatsApp group. So if they do join, they'll have an opportunity to see whenever we post something new. But of course, they can also just check the website and see what new content is there.
And what's that web address?
It is a Google Sites. So it would be easiest probably if I share the link, but it's like Google Sites/Destination Europe or something like that.
Okay, great. So for those listening, then link to your website, and is it okay if we put the WhatsApp group as well in the description?
Mm-hmm.
As
yeah,
well?
Yeah, they'll have to request to join, and then we'll try to approve them so they can join the group.
Yeah, I've enjoyed y'all's website. That's really nice to have a landing spot where you can like clearly articulate, you know, here's the vision, here's the reports that we've made so far, here's what we found. I think that's really key. And so people can find more info, but also like how can they get involved too? You know, if there's others out there, it's like, oh, that resonates. You know, I could get involved with that or whatever it is. Hopefully a lot more of that happens, because I really believe in what you guys are doing.
Yeah. So some other ways, so that's a good way to follow along. And as far as getting involved, I think one way to get involved is as you follow along to talk about it with other people. Because as we talk about it, I feel like my main goals right now is to bring awareness. And so everybody can help. Everybody that's following along can help with that task. So yeah, as you follow along on the website, or you hear people talking about Europe or hear interesting things, continue to spread that information to make people aware. And then we're also, as we visit these different organizations that are here, doing our best to make people aware of the needs that those organizations have. So ways that somebody could pretty easily get involved. So like there's an internship program here to join the team in Spain, and it's an opportunity to learn Moroccan Arabic and Spanish, and spend time with a long-term team here. And it's an awesome opportunity.
Wow.
So anyway, I'm going to be posting some information about that on the WhatsApp group so that people are aware of that. So as we see needs that specific teams on the ground have, trying to share that as well. So you'll be made known, aware of those opportunities to be involved. And then there is also opportunity through DNI to, if somebody wants to give financially towards some of the costs of exploration, they can do that through DNI site. I could give you a link to share for that as well.
Yeah, we'll put that down in the description. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, one other way people could get involved is if you, I'm not anywhere close to being an expert on what opportunities are in Europe. And so if anybody's listening and has contacts or friends living in different places in Europe, we plan to come back and be in for sure Germany, probably Poland, and maybe a few other countries next spring when we return for 3 more months. And so we'd love more contacts or ideas of things that people think that we should be researching or checking out. Some people have already given me a couple ideas of places that we should check into or connect with. And so, yeah, we'd love to hear from people as well if they have ideas or input.
Yeah, for sure. It has been really fun as we've, you know, been somewhat connected to this thing and hearing from different places and kind of putting some pieces together. And it's always good to hear from listeners that are over there. I just wish there was more options to point these people to a community that they can join. And I just want to commend you for that vision, that work. And I think it's something well worth doing. I think it's just really easy to forget how great the needs are in a place like Europe. It feels kind of Christian, but it's very post-Christian. And y'all are, you know, you're putting a spotlight on that. You're raising awareness for that. Hopefully it's stirring a lot of interest. And at a minimum, you know, maybe people will pray a little different and actually consider, you know, hey, is this somewhere I should go? Or is this something I can support? Whatever that might look like. You know, I'd love to see many different Anabaptist ministries or church groups or whatever making a return to Europe. And, you know, maybe we can have a chat in 10 years from now and it'd be like, yeah, there's a network of churches there, you know? So when I get an email from someone in London, it'd be like, hey, it's, you know, I'd love to learn more about this. I saw some of your videos. We can be like, yeah, sure. There's a church, you know, this, you know, down at Piccadilly, you know, and, or whatever it might be. Like, I think that would be fabulous. And I want to be clear. This isn't us saying, you know, we're the only church, you know, and everybody has to, you know, that's not the point, but it does pain me when there are people out there that see the stuff we're making and say, wow, this is really interesting. I want to learn more. I want to meet you all. And they don't even have that option. It just kind of makes me sad. And I'd like them to have that option. And you're part of that. So thank you for doing that, for this vision. I think it's significant. And I'm glad we could, you know, give it a little bit of attention here on this podcast. And hopefully we can do more of this in the future. But yeah, do you have more thoughts on that or anything else you'd want to add as we bring this episode to a close?
Yeah, I might just add as well that it's people like you that I've talked to that have kind of gotten behind it as well. And I feel like God has called me and my family to play a specific role in this, but I feel very much like it's not just my vision. You know, we want to do our best as we explore and look for opportunities, and you can certainly join us in prayer that God will continue to open doors and contacts for us to meet. Because like I said, we can't learn too much just by driving through. But as we get to meet and talk with people, we can learn a lot more. But yeah, getting to talk with people like you and the DNI admin team has been really excited about the vision, and people I've talked to from other various organizations. And so, yeah, I've felt that there's a growing interest, and it's something beyond just me personally. I'm excited that I get to play this role in it. And it's also beyond just what I want to accomplish or what different people I've talked to have, you know, envisioning. It's really most importantly about what God wants to accomplish and what he wants to do. But we're certainly seeing opportunities, and we want to explore those and make that note.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, thank you for coming on the podcast. I think this is the first time I've interviewed someone who's in a different country at time of recording. Oh, no, I'll take that back. We interviewed Vince Beiler. He was at Cambridge at the time. So, but this is a pretty rare and a neat opportunity and a pretty unique thing that you're doing here. And hopefully we hear from feedback from the listeners. So thank you all for listening to this episode. If you have contacts or any information on this idea of Anabaptism and the return to Europe, I guess you could call it, or however we want to phrase this, we'd love to hear from you. We love hearing from our listeners. And if you're hearing this podcast, that means you're part of our support network, and we really do appreciate it. It's because of people like you that we do hear from people in Europe and different places that have interest in learning more. And we'll see where all that goes, but I'm looking forward to having this conversation in 10 years and see what will have happened, I guess. So it's an exciting thought. So thanks again, AJ. I appreciate your time, and let's be in touch.
Yeah, thank you.